from 1 Corinthians 13. If I speak in the tongues of men or of angels, but do not have love, I am only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have a faith that can move mountains, but do not have love, I am nothing. If I give all I possess to the poor and give over my body to hardship that I may boast, but do not have love, I gain nothing. Love is patient, love is kind. It does not envy, it does not boast, it is not proud. It does not dishonour others, it is not self-seeking. It is not easily angered, it keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. Love never fails. But where there are prophecies, they will cease. Where there are tongues, they will be stilled. Where there is knowledge, it will pass away. For we know in part and we prophesy in part, but when completeness comes, what is in part disappears. When I was a child, I talked like a child. I thought like a child, I reasoned like a child. When I became a man, I put the ways of childhood behind me. For now we see only a reflection, as in a mirror, then we shall see face to face. Now I know in part, then I shall know fully, even as I am fully known. And now these three remain, faith, hope, and love. But the greatest of these is love.
Great to see Nathan, Ali here. Big clap to these guys. Good to see you guys. They've been in the Solomon Islands. I think Eliza's looking forward to Todd coming home. I'm super looking forward to Janelle coming home tonight. I think I'm reasonably domesticated, but one area I haven't been domesticated in is it's clothes washing, and I realise how big of a task that is. Like, you finish one lot of clothes washing, and then your kids, Liam and Jess, just bring more and more and more stuff all the week. So that's been hard. I've suffered greatly during the week. Anyway. My name's Andrew. If you're a visitor here, I'm just one of the pastors here, and it's my privilege to actually bring God's word to you tonight. And we continue in our series looking at 1 Corinthians, and I don't know about you, but as we've been going through this series, I've been kind of looking at from an aspect of being a pastor and thinking, is this a church that I would like to lead? On the one hand, I would say yes, because on the one hand, they're an incredibly gifted church. They've got great leaders, great preachers, great pastors. They've got all the dynamic spiritual gifts, speaking in tongues, prophesying. There's healing happening all over the place. Yet on the other side, they're a church that is actually incredibly sinful, incredibly selfish. They're a church that is actually full of envy. They're taking one another to the law courts. And so I think, and I look at the Corinthian church and I say, would I actually like to lead this church? In some ways, it'll be super exciting because every Sunday you would see amazing things happen, the work of the Spirit in people's lives. But then Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, I reckon you'd just be dealing with conflict after conflict after conflict. And Paul is writing to these guys to try to actually get them back on track. And what is the central thing he actually says to them? The central thing that he says to the Corinthians and he says to you and I as followers of Jesus today, the thing that is actually going to keep us on track as a community of faith, as followers of Jesus, the thing that is more important than anything else, the thing that you have to actually go to work on the moment you actually become a follower of Jesus is the word love and the concept of love. Chapter 12, verse 31, Paul says, "And yet I will show you the most excellent way." And then he launches into chapter 13, which is the most famous chapter on love ever written in human history. At the end of it, he says, "But the greatest of these is love." Elsewhere, he says, "A faith that counts is a faith in Jesus that is full of love for God and for the saints." And Paul says, he says, "Above all, whatever else you do, whatever else you actually put into practice, whatever else you actually learn from me," he says, "above all, actually put on love." You see, Paul ranks love as the supreme, I guess, quality or value of a follower of Jesus. This passage is probably one of the easiest passages to preach on because it's such a good passage, but it's also a really hard passage to preach on because anybody who's been at a wedding, and probably you've been at a number of weddings, have heard this passage being preached on all the time, right? And so you get to verse 4 and it says, love is patient, love is kind, love does not envy, it does not boast, it is not proud, and you kind of switch off because you've kind of heard it all before. And you've been sat at a wedding and everything seems perfect. The groom is there in his suit and he seems perfect. And the bride comes down and she's glorious and she's beautiful. And they make these vows and they make these commitments to one another. And this passage is read out and you think, oh yeah, that is how they will love one another. But anybody who actually has been married will realize how difficult this passage is to put into practice. It actually begins with a radical statement that heroic gifts without love is nothing. That you can be the best preacher, you can be the best leader, you can be the best singer, you can be the best whatever you want to put in the end of that sentence, but if you do not have love, the Apostle Paul says you are nothing. Look at verse 1. Paul says, if I speak in the tongues of men or of angels but do not have love, I'm only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and I have faith that can move mountains, but I do not have love, I am nothing. If I give all I possess to the poor and give my body over to hardship that I might boast, but I do not have love, I gain nothing and I am nothing. If I could speak in the language of angels, if I could preach outstanding sermons that attract the masses, Paul says, if I can do that, but if I don't have love, I am nothing. If I have the intellect that can actually fathom all mysteries, that I can actually understand knowledge above knowledge above knowledge, and if I can write books after books after books, giving people insight into the universe, into God, into life, but have not love, Paul says, I am nothing. If I have a faith that can actually move Mount Kosciuszko up from its roots and plant it in my front yard, but I do not have love, the Apostle Paul says, I am nothing. I am nothing without love, and what I do means nothing. One of the things I really like doing is I like reading biographies of both Christians and non-Christians. I just like history. And some of the biographies of Christians are just amazing. What some of our Christian leaders in past history have done. They've changed cultures. They've reshaped countries. But some of these biographies that you read about Christian missionaries and Christian leaders, you see that these people have lived amazing lives, that they've achieved great things. But then you read about their home life, about the cost to their husband or to their wife, and how often their spouse felt actually misused and mistreated and taken for granted. You read more about their home life and how separated they are from their kids, and their kids actually want to have nothing to do with them and nothing to do with their Christian faith because mum or dad wasn't around, because what were they doing? They were off saving the world. And the Apostle Paul says, you can change the world. You can turn the world upside down. You can achieve great things, but if you do not have love, who you are and what you do accounts for nothing. In maths, I'm not great with maths, but my understanding of maths, if you have a number greater than one and if you multiply it by a number of greater than one, you'll get a larger number. I think that's right, isn't it? So you need to help me out here. 9 times 7. What is 9 times 7? I'll take your word for it. I believe that's all right. 8 times 11. What's that? You sound a little bit confused, Liam Duncan. 5 times 6, what's that? You sure? Okay, I'll take your word for it. But if you take a big number and times it by 0, so 1,000 times 0, what do you get? You get no increase. 1,000,000 times 0, you get no increase. 1,000,000,000 times 0, and you don't get an increase. And this is what the Apostle Paul says. He says anything that you actually do in the Christian life, in Christian ministry, in Christian service, because that is what this passage is talking about. If it is not done in love, then you are just a resounding gong and it means nothing. So if you're worshiping leading, and if you don't actually genuinely love and care for the people that you're leading in worship, the Apostle Paul says you're just a gong. If you're a youth group leader and you're actually only there because, you know, your other mates are there and it's more of a social thing and you don't really have a deep love for God and you don't have a really deep love for the kids, the Apostle Paul says, he says, you're nothing more than a clanging cymbal. You're just a noise. Your efforts and your work and your talents actually mean nothing. Paul then gives us a list of do's and don'ts of love. When you actually read this book, you know, you think of this kind of romantic idea of love, don't you? You know, of a, you know, a proposal, of a selfie, of the sky turning pink, of kind of a romantic comedy, of a love song and all that kind of stuff. But that's not what this type of love is. This type of love is actually roll up your sleeves. This is the type of love that is actually hard work and difficult. So let's look at it. Verse 4, love is patient, love is kind, it does not envy, it does not boast, it is not proud. We come with a first description that love is patient, and I'm stuffed right at the beginning because patience, I'm horrible at patience. The fruit of the Spirit, love, joy, peace, patience. I'm terrible, terrible at patience. I want things done now and I want things done yesterday, and I hate waiting for anyone or anything. Early on in our marriage, Jenna and I, we've got different concepts of time. So I like being early, or like at least like 20 minutes before something starts. I just like getting there to be on time. Janelle, not so much. So early on in our marriage, we've been preparing to go out for the night, or maybe even coming to church, and it comes time to leave, and Janelle's still kind of getting ready, and so I think I'll kind of just hurry her up, and so I'll walk out into the car and wait for her in the car, and surprising enough, that didn't actually work very well. And so then I'd actually start the car up so she could hear the noise of the motor and she'd know that it was actually time to leave. You'd think that was a good hint, and she'd actually come out and say, "Oh, Andrew, thanks for reminding me that now's the time to go." But that didn't work much at all. And then I'd actually start revving the car, you know, just giving it a big more rev so she could definitely hear it. And then I start honking the horn. And to my surprise, I was only young, newly married, none of that actually worked. I was terrible at patience, and I still am. This week we went to Jervis Bay, and at Jervis Bay they've got these new bike paths, and they're great bike paths. But do you know the annoying thing about this bike path is that you have to actually share it with other people? Do you know the worst people on a bike path? You know who they are? They're little kids. Little kids are just so unpredictable. You know, they're on their scooter or on their bike, and you think that they've actually pulled over so you can actually go around them, but then right at the last minute, they'll actually pull out in front of you and you'll ram into them. Little kids shouldn't be allowed on the footpaths. You know, there should be some sort of fence place where you put little kids in and they can just bang into one another and hurt one another, but, you know, keep them off the path. You know who else is bad on a footpath? It's older people. Older people either can't hear you or can't see you, but when you get close to them, you frighten them and they jump in front of you. The older people should be put with the little kids in the fence part and they should be running into one another. Do you know who else is also bad? People who are actually in love. You know, boyfriends and girlfriends, they're holding their hands and they can't even separate their hands for 5 seconds just to form a single line. They can't do that. Older people, younger people, people who are in love should be put in an offence place and allow people like myself just to ride their bikes in peace. Patience, I'm terrible at it. Do you know what this word patience actually means, though? It means long-suffering. It means to suffer long. It describes God's love for us. Do you know why the Bible is so thick? Because God has actually been loving us for so, so, so long. And his love for us is actually full of suffering. There's a book in the Old Testament called Hosea.
And it describes the prophet Hosea's ministry. And what God tells the prophet Hosea to do is to go and marry Gomer. Gomer is a prostitute. She's a woman of the street. Hosea knows that Gomer will actually be unfaithful to him. Hosea goes and marries Gomer, and within just, you know, a few days, a few weeks, Gomer is out sleeping and having sex with other men. Hosea is the laugh of the town. Every time he walks down the street, they yell out to him, "Oh, how's your love life going with Gomer?" And everybody sniggers because they've also been with Gomer as well too. And then God actually asked Hosea to go out and out into the streets and search for Gomer and keep on searching for Gomer. And when you find her, to actually pay her and to actually win her back. And Hosea actually does that. He goes out to this unfaithful person, this person who's been unfaithful again and again and again, this person who's actually been horrible to him, this person who's actually rebuffed his love. And he goes out with this long-suffering love and he says, "I love you and I love you only. I'm patient, I'm long-suffering in love for you," says God. And God says, "This is how I want you to be with one another." Love is not easy. Love is difficult. It's costly to be patient. Love is patient. Love is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. Love is kind. You know, when people talk about you, when you're not there and people actually describe who you are, do they actually describe a person who is kind? A kind thought, a kind prayer, a kind gesture, wanting the best for others, delighting in the success of others, a kind person who actually wants to build people up instead of tearing them down. I was reading a book a number of years ago called Love Works by a CEO, Joel Hershen. And he's got seven qualities in his company. His company is one of these companies that has theme parks all around the US of Australia. And his seven qualities for his company is this. It's straight out of 1 Corinthians. The values are: be patient, be kind, be trusting, be unselfish, be truthful, be forgiving, be dedicated. If you work for this company, this is how you're actually meant to behave. Every year you get a review, and the review is being reviewed around kindness. How do you relate to your boss? How do you relate to your peers? How do you actually relate to those who are actually under you? Do you show kindness towards these people? Interestingly, that their company, there are less sick days, there are less time off in stress leave, they have actually less turnover in terms of employment, because here is a culture in which people enjoy doing their work in. And his work could actually put many churches to shame, couldn't it? His work is actually trying to take seriously the teachings of the Apostle Paul. Love is patient, love is kind, it does not envy, it does not envy. There's a German word called Schadenfreude, which actually means taking pleasure or delight in the failures of others, which is what kind of being envious is. Envy is actually you don't want to see another person succeed. But what the Apostle Paul here is saying, be a person who wants to see other people flourish and other people do well. Be the type of person who rejoices when somebody gets a promotion at work. Be the kind of person who rejoices when somebody does well in ministry. Be the kind of person who's generous in their attitude towards others. When I was at school, we for just one season, we played water polo. I'm not a great swimmer, and I know in water polo in the Olympics, you know, they can actually raise themselves just by kicking their feet and swimming and all that kind of stuff. I could never do that. The only way I could actually raise myself and get over my opponent is by actually grabbing them and pushing them down. So, you know, I'd push them down and I'd lift myself up so I could actually get the ball. But that's actually how many of us are actually living our lives, aren't we? We're envious. We're constantly insecure and envious of others, and we're pulling them down so that we ourselves could be lifted up. And Paul says that is not loving. love. It does not dishonor others. It's not self-seeking. It's not easily angered. It keeps no records of wrong. So there's a resilience about love. You know, some people that you just have to walk on eggshells around them because they're so easily offended. Some people always looking into situations and comments and, body language and all that kind of stuff and saying, well, that person really meant this or that person really meant that. And if there's a harsh comment, they hold on to that harsh comment and they will never give it up and they will never release it. And you know, they have those kind of arguments that go on in their head with somebody else and they always win those arguments. Have you ever had those arguments where, you know, you have a disagreement with somebody and you always win that inside of your head? Paul says, don't be like that. In my previous church, there was a lady who came to me after church once, and she said, you know, she had this falling out with somebody within the church, and she described what happened in that conversation, and I thought it was no big deal, and but she was really upset, and she was really in tears, and I said, well, okay, like, my role here is actually to see you guys be reconciled to one another. You know, when did this happen? And she said, oh, about 13 years ago. For 13 years, she'd been holding on to this little comment, this little statement, and she'd been dwelling on it and became bigger and bigger and bigger, and she became more and more resentful and harder. And Paul says, don't be like that. Think the best of others, want the best of others, believe in the best of others. Don't be so sensitive. Love keeps no records of wrongs. So there's not a scorecard, you know, where we actually remember the wrongs of other people. We remember, oh, you know, that kid when he was 16, 17 years of age did this and this and this. And every time they try to do something in ministry in church, we remind them of what they were like. But remember, Jesus actually doesn't treat us that way anymore, does he? He doesn't actually keep a record of our wrongs. He doesn't hold our wrongs against other people. So we who are sinful, how can we actually hold the wrongs of others against them? In that scorecard, we always win, don't we? We always perceive ourselves to be better than that other person. That other person is actually terrible, and I'm great, and I'm right all the time. And Paul says, don't be like that. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with truth. Remember that truth is actually a person. Truth is the person of Jesus. So how does this work? We're trying to think of two people within the church who have had an argument and they're having a conflict. Who do you side with? The person that you like the most? The person that you're closest with? Your best pal? Your best buddy? Now you side with truth. You side with Jesus. You seek to be Jesus in that situation and you seek to actually bring truth to that situation. You know, speaking the truth in love to one another, I reckon that's one of the most hardest spiritual disciplines that there is, isn't it? Some people actually never speak the truth to another person because, in a sense, they're so afraid of actually upsetting other people. They've got so much of a desire to actually be liked, to be wanted, to be, you know, kind of respected. They don't want to break off a relationship. But there are times when to be loving is to speak the truth, to give a word of warning, to speak into somebody's life the very words of Jesus. Love is tough. Love is hard. It's difficult. You know, I like watching AFL, and there are some AFL players that really, really frustrate me. You know, some weeks they're just, you know, game winners. They're just brilliant. They can turn a game on its head. They can kick, you know, 7 goals in no time at all. But then the following week, they're really inconsistent and they hardly get a touch. And you can never actually rely upon them. Many of us are like that. We're actually really inconsistent in our loving. When the spotlight's on us, perhaps when we're at church, perhaps when we're in a social environment, then we're loving and then we're kind and then we're gracious and then we're peaceful towards others. But when the spotlight is off us, when we're at home, when we're with our brothers or sisters or our mum and dad, we actually can be very inconsistent in the way that we love people. Love never fails, but where there are prophecies, they will cease. Where there are tongues, they will be stilled. Where there is knowledge, it will pass away. Paul, remember, is talking to the Corinthians, and this is a group of people who are so fixated on gifts. They are so amazed with prophecies and speaking in tongues and healings and preaching and who is the best leader. And Paul says that these gifts will one day, they will actually pass away and they'll be forgotten. He says that these gifts are even imperfect. Verse 9, for we know in part and we prophesy in part. So they're not even complete within themselves. And the Apostle Paul says, when it comes to love, I want you to grow up and become adult. Verse 11, he says, when I was a child, I talked like a child, I thought like a child, I reasoned like a child. But when I became a man, I put those ways of childhood behind me. You know, you get a three-year-old and you give a three-year-old a choice between an ice cream and $1 million. What would a three-year-old choose? They would choose that ice cream every single time. And then that pleasure will be gone within 2 or 3 minutes. And the Apostle Paul says, change your mind, become an adult, grow up in what you actually see and what you actually value and what you see as it being important. I can remember when I was younger, my dad, I grew up in Tassie, and a big crowd in Tassie was like 5,000 people, and my dad took me to an AFL Grand Final, and there was 100,000 people at this AFL Grand Final, and I was just blown away by it. It was just, you know, magnificent, it was glorious, it was shiny, it was fantastic. All my life, I've been into sailing. All my life, every Christmas and birthday time and Father's Day, Janelle and the kids, they say, well, what do you want for, you know, your birthday? And I just say, I want a yacht. Every year, it's just the same thing. I think yachts are beautiful. They're amazing. I go down to, you know, the rivers and see these beautiful yachts, and they're amazing. They're glorious. And I think, oh, I just want one of those. They're great. There's a new Ford Mustang. I dropped Jesse's friend off at the airport this morning, and there's this new Ford 2019 V8 Ford Mustang in the airport, and I looked at that, and I thought, there's only 2 seats in it, so I can't take the kids. And I thought, oh, I just want one of those. That is great. That's spectacular. But do you know what the Apostle Paul says? Do you know what he says is spectacular? What he says is glorious? What he says is beautiful? He says it's love in the difficult places. It's when a mum and dad or a husband and wife comes home from a really difficult day's work and they're just being hammered and torn apart and they're stressed out beyond their, you know, they're just going crazy, and they walk into the home and they clothe themselves in love and they are kind and they are patient and they do the washing up and they take the garbage out and they do it joyfully and they're attentive. The Apostle Paul says, when you see that, be blown away by that, because that is glorious. Do you know what else is amazing? When two friends who love one another and care for one another have some sort of falling out with one another, there's been a conflict, and they call one another up and say, let's go for a walk in the park, and they meet in the park, and the friend says, look, I was stupid, I said the wrong thing, I did the wrong thing, I'm so sorry, I just love you and I want to be restored to you, and they hug one another. The Apostle Paul says, that is glorious. Do you know what is amazing? What is amazing is when you serve other people and you do it day in, day out, week in, week out, month in, month out, year in, year out, decade after decade, and nobody sees and nobody notices it, but you do it for the Lord and for the well-being of others, and God says that is love and that is beautiful and that is glorious. Friends, be careful about what dazzles you. The Apostle Paul says, love needs to captivate your mind and your heart and your soul, and it needs to change the way that you live.
Verse 13, and now these three things will remain, faith, hope, and love, but the greatest of these is love. And I've been trying to work out all this week why the Apostle Paul says the greatest of these is love. Well, two reasons. I think faith and hope ultimately will find their completion and the fulfillment in the new creation. You won't need them there, but love will actually continue on. But also, God is not faith and God is not hope, but He is love. For all eternity, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit have been perfectly loving one another, serving one another, being kind with one another, being gentle with one another, being truthful with one another. And if that is what God is like, to be a follower of Jesus is to actually be invited into that Trinitarian relationship, to experience love and to do love, which begins now, but it actually lasts and it stretches out for all eternity. Friends, think about your own walk with Jesus. It's not the great worship leader or the great musicians that's made a great difference in your life. It's not the great preacher that makes a great difference in your life. It's the people who have loved you the most. You've caught Christianity as much as it's been taught to you. Isn't that true? You owe your relationship with Jesus to a relationship with another brother or sister in Christ, perhaps many people who have loved you, who have cared for you, who have picked you up in the darkest moments, and their love has made a difference. Paul says to this church who have lost the plot, they are the most gifted church on the face of this planet, but he says, without love, you are a gong. You're just a loud noise. Friends, let's not be a gong. Let's be full of love for one another. Amen? Let's pray. Just allow you to speak to God about what He's been speaking to you about.